KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM. Good evening, everyone. This is Nemo Cicados for Finding Me. And for the next few episodes of Finding Me, I'm going to be going over a book that I read as a child, and I wanted to share it with you because it's a major part of my childhood growing up. And when you're queer, you know, certain books teach you as children lessons in life, and at least this one did, and it gave me certain expectations that I should have growing up, like, you know, who I am as a person. And one might think that the Lady Coddington's Pressed Fairy Book, which I have here, written by Terry Jones and illustrations by Brian Froud, might be something for girls, and it could be. But for me, growing up, it means a lot of different things. Like, you know, not only the nostalgia, but growing up knowing that I had a different look at gender, and I was not necessarily pushed into my expression as a woman, but rather just to be myself as much as I could. And this book, while it is a fantasy genre, it now has different meaning to me now that I'm older. And you can now listen to my audiobook version that I did, because when I was in high school in 2011, when I was graduating, I needed to distract myself with a project. And with that project, I made this dramatic audiobook reading, because growing up with my sister's dad, he would have us listen to audiobooks done in a dramatic way, and I wanted to do something like that myself because I wanted to be a voice actor at one point. And I think I succeeded in some ways. And listening to it, the audio quality is, you know, I'm kind of self-critiquing, but it could have been better, but it's very good for when I did it. So I'm still proud of it, and I hope you enjoy it. And some of the analysis and thoughts that I have on it, and since, you know, I've been talking about queer fandom lately, maybe you'll be a fan of this as well in some way or another. I really think that a lot of queer women could enjoy it as well as some men, if that's what they're into. So, I'm going to get into it now, and we're going to play this piece by piece along with some of my thoughts on the matter. So, the book looks like this. I just, for those of you on the radio, it looks like, something akin to, like, a photo album with, the brown triangle corners, and it looks aged, like, lots of, like, water stained. And it has this picture of a fairy that looks like it was smashed into the cover. And it looks, in the title of the book is written in cursive, as if the person who wrote the diary signed it themselves. Like, you know, this is my fairy book. And when you turn the first page, you know, it gives us a title. And I will now have the audiobook play piece by piece so that you can get a feel of what it was like for me reading and listening to my mom read this book to me as a child and like how I imagine it played out in my head. And maybe you can have fun imagining as well. So let's begin. Of course, everyone is familiar with the famous photograph of the small girl surrounded by fairies, which caused such a sensation when it was first published in The Regular magazine in 1907. It inspired many imitations and was circulated around the world. While some skeptics dismissed it as a hoax, it was hailed in many quarters as the final, irrefutable proof of the existence of fairies. No less an authority on the subject than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was fully persuaded of its authenticity and spoke to a packed audience about significance, particularly in the Manchester area. J. M. Barrie himself was convinced that he recognized it at least one of the fairies in the photograph, and the Reverend Charles Dodgson, better known as Lewis Carroll, appeared from beyond the grave to clairvoyants up and down the country to vouch for the veracity of the photograph. But, until recently, surprisingly little was known about the young girl in the photograph. It was known that her name was Angelica Coddington, and that she was the only daughter of Lord Coddington of Bovey, but otherwise the page of history upon which her name appears was blank. On the death of her father, Angelica became Lady Coddington, and lived as a recluse on the family estate until she died in 1991. She never married and had no friends or even acquaintances other than her housekeeper, Ethel, and she did not even know her very well. It was thought that perhaps it was ridicule heaped upon the photos by the popular press that drove Angelica Coddington into her life of seclusion. But nobody really knew the full story until last year, when the Coddington estate was bought by the Potterton Properties PLC, and the old house was finally demolished to make way for the prestige office block in an unspoiled country setting, which so many firms have already chosen as a preferred lifestyle. Before the bulldozers moved in, a group of local troublemakers, led by the vicar, the Reverend Charles Dodgson, no relation, Dr. Broadbent, Bovey's last GP working within the now outmoded NHS system, and the entire population of the village of Bovey itself, established a squat in the building with the intention of preventing Potterton Properties PLC from going about their lawful business of obliterating the Elizabethan Manor House and the medieval outbuildings. During the course of this occupation, which was eventually brought to the conclusion by the police and the armed forces, with surprisingly little loss of life, one of the squatters, the Right Honorable Philip Menzies, MP, QC, OBE, discovered a small volume stuck behind a trunk in the attic. As he was about to tear out the pages in order to light a fire, he became aware that he might be holding in his hands something rather special. When he put his glasses on, he immediately recognized the importance of his find. He abandoned the squat in order to obtain the services of a first-class London lawyer, who specialized in copyright, treasure trove, and making money out of other people's property, a little known by water of English law, which has proved surprisingly fruitful for those who have taken the trouble to avail themselves of it. Thanks to this chance discovery and the untiring efforts of the publicity department of the publisher, you are now holding in your hands a faithful reproduction of one of the most intriguing, sensational, and epoch-making of books of all times, Lady Coddington's Press Fairy Book. Here at last is explained, in all its graphic detail, the way in which that first photograph came to be taken. What is more, here is a faithful record of many, many more fairies who appeared to Angelica Coddington throughout her earliest years, and not only written accounts, for this book is nothing less than a physical record of actual living fairies. The way in which all of these remarkable impressions came to be left upon these pages is explained within the book itself, and in a further batch of photographs, which was later found under her bed. Suffice it to say that Angelica Coddington discovered that if she was sat still with a book upon her lap, fairies, being inquisitive creatures, would come fluttering around her, and with a sure eye, quick lunge, and a firm snapping together of the book, she could catch the fairies between her pages and thus preserve their appearance for posterity.
At the same time, Lady Coddington kept a detailed diary of her fairy sightings, and this is faithfully reproduced here in its original position, alongside the pressing of the fairies themselves. This is a unique and remarkable book, perhaps the most extraordinary volume that has been my privilege to supervise for publication. I hope it will bring lasting pleasure and happy memories to those who aren't already familiar with the fairy world. And, for those who have not as yet been granted that privilege, I hope that this book will bring some illumination. Terry Jones, London, February 1994.
So that was the author's note on that. And I suppose my past self didn't feel like reading the publisher's note, but I thought it was funny as a child. And it goes like this, and I'll even voice act this little piece. The RSPCF, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Fairies, has asked the publisher to make it clear that no fairies were injured or killed during the manufacturing of this book. The pictures in this book are psychic impressions of fairies. The RSPCF would also like to point out that after one or two unfortunate casualties in the early stages, all the fairies presented in these pages have discovered a way of leaving their psychic imprint without suffering any physical harm themselves. In fact, the whole process became recognized as a fairy sporting activity and qualified for a Gooseberry Medal at the Millennial Fairy Olympics in 1921. So, that was the thing on that for the publisher's note. And before, that's all I have to say on that. So now I'm going to play some of the entries that I recorded back then, and then give you my thoughts on them afterwards, which is, you know, the fun part. But I will tell you this. In the book, you see these paintings of the fairies illustrated for kids. But, you know, for me, it's like, ooh, they're real. And what was fun about it was also the handwriting of the diary entries was like a child. And when my mom was reading it out loud to me, she would do it in her British accent, which was not very good voice acting on her part. And she talks about this very frequently where she's like, oh, I'm going to be terrible at this. And I don't do a very good British accent mimicry, but I do apparently. But it was fun reading this book because it was spelled in such a way that it sounds like the child was sounding out their words. And when you look at the handwriting, which is not only clumsy, messy, but also spelled incorrectly, you get a feel for like how they spoke and how they talk even. So I will continue that.
July 6, 1895. Nana wouldn't believe me. Etty wouldn't believe me. Auntie Missy wouldn't believe me. But I got one. Now they've got to believe me. July 7, 1895. I showed my fairy to Etty, but she said Nana would be cross because my book is for pressing flowers in, not fairies. So I won't show it to anybody. I'm going to fill my book up with fairies, so there. July 8th, 1895. I caught another fairy. It was flying past my window, but I was too quick for it. It didn't see me coming up behind it, but I only caught a bit of it. August 10th, 1896. I knew there was fairies behind the potting shed, so I went and sat very still with my book open in my lap, and the fairies was curious and inquisitive, and they all came around to look at me, and one landed on my book. And I went. I banged the book shut and I caught the fairy. It is a really beautiful one. I like it best. August 12th, 1896. I caught another fairy today. But it looks very angry. I wonder if it was looking for the other fairy I caught. Perhaps it is the king of the fairies looking for his daughter or the queen of the fairies. But I don't care. I like collecting fairies. I am going to collect all the fairies in my book.
Now, in this next part, it was fun reading it because not, like I said, it looked like it was written by a child, and I even made it sound like I was a child when I was recording this. So when the change happened, I made note of that because the handwriting became so much neater. It was still messy in some parts, like, you know, it's a young child learning how to spell still, but they're a little bit more careful about it. Like, for example, in this entry, the character Angelica Coddington talks about, "I thought I would never see one again," and she spells again A-G-A-N-E. So, you know, she's still learning how to spell, learning how to write, have some penmanship, but she's also has a flair for dramatics when she emphasizes her words by underlining or decorating her words with sound effects so that, you know, the audience reading her diary can understand, like, you know, that smack, that snap of her book. So that was fun when I was reading it. And you can see then the change in her age. So, let's see. I think we will have time for one or two more entries, and I will continue giving you my thoughts in between.
August 8th, 1899. It has been 3 years since I last saw a fairy. I was beginning to think I would never see one again. But I was down by the pudding shed, and suddenly I saw one. I crept up behind it and opened my book and I caught it. It's a funny looking one. I think it must be a goblin or an elf. August 11th, 1899. A great many fairies came buzzing around me today. They seemed quite excited and kept glaring at me and flying right up my nose, but I still caught one. I am going to call her Florizel. She is a young fairy who was a little bit more daring than the rest. I wonder what she did in Fairyland, and how old she was. Perhaps she was 10 years old, perhaps 30, perhaps 30,000. It's hard to know when it's old with fairies. Here is the story of Florizel the Nosy Fairy. There was nothing she would not stick her nose into. If you left the milk out at night, as like as not, you'd find Florizel floating in it in the morning. "Help me out," she would say, "for the sides of this jug are too steep and slippery, and my wings are all soggy with milk." "Will you grant me 3 wishes if I do?" said the little girl. "I can't do 3 wishes," replied Florizel, "because I left my wand behind, but I can grant one." "That'll do," said the little girl, and she put a straw into the milk, and the fairy climbed up it. Then the little girl gave Florizel a wash in her own wash basin. She made a shower with a tea strainer, and Florizel washed all the milk out of her wings and rule book. Fairies always carry a rule book with them, especially if they are only apprentice fairies like Florizel. Then the little girl sat the fairy in front of the fire and dried her off. And all the time, Florizel kept asking, "What's that burning in the grate? Where do you keep your magic powder? How do you fly anywhere? What's the name of your king? Who do you look like? Why do you go to bed at night?" And so on and so forth. And the little girl tried to answer her as best she could. When she had quite dried the fairy, and her wings were all shimmering, all ready to fly, the little girl said to Florizel, "Now, can I have my wish?" "Oh," said Florizel, "I said I could grant one wish, but never said it was your wish. It's my wish, and I wish I was out of here." And she disappeared like a bubble bursts, and all that was left of Florizel the Nosy Fairy was a little wet patch on the rug. For I forgot to tell you, Florizel was not only a nosy fairy, she was also a very tricky one as well. The end.
So in that entry, it was kind of funny to read that she got creative with and started to be a little bit more introspective, I guess. Well, maybe not introspective, but like look into who the fairies might be, or she just assigned them names just because she could and made up stories about them, like, you know, what their lives might have been like. And she can only speculate since, you know, she doesn't really talk to them. She just captures them for eternity in her book. And so this next entry, like, really makes me think, and still does to this day. A lot of this book still makes me think. And I hope it makes you think as well when I read this, probably the last entry before we close out. And I will give you my final thoughts before I start on part two of this book analysis, especially coming from me as a queer person. So,
July 15th, 1902. I have been thinking that perhaps the fairies have been avoiding me, for I certainly have seen neither wing nor wand of them for years. Sometimes I open my book of pressed fairies, and I can hardly believe what I am looking at. Did I really see these creatures flying around my head? Did I really catch them in my book? Where have they gone? Have I lost the ability to see them forever? Many times I have gone down to the potting shed and sat there still as still, and yet I have seen nothing. Sometimes I have felt fairies around me, but nothing more. But today, something amazing happened. I was down behind the potting shed when I spotted a little window I had never noticed before. I looked through it and could hardly believe my eyes. The inside of the potting shed looked quite different through that window. It was all neat and tidy, and there was a little scrap of rug and two chairs and a strange black stove. In fact, just like I'd always longed to have it. I squeezed through the little window and into the potting shed. A fire was burning in the stove. How strange! The potting shed was usually full of broken pots and dead tomatoes and a few old wooden boxes full of soil. But now, there was a kitchen drawer against the wall and a book on the shelf. I was just going to look at the book when the kettle on the stove started to whistle. So instead, I took it off the stove and filled the teapot that suddenly appeared on the table. Then a cup appeared and a jug of milk. I suppose I might as well have a cup of tea, I said to myself. But it was the strangest tasting tea I ever did drink, and afterwards I felt quite drowsy. In fact, I think I must have sat in that cozy chair and fallen asleep. For the next minute, it was dark. There was a candle burning on the dresser. When I went across to it, I saw that the book was now open. So I picked it up and read what was written on the page. It said, "The Fairy Call, a spell for summoning the fairies. Sit where the cat sits. Cross your toes, close your eyes, and smell a rose. Then say under your breath, 'I believe in fairies, sure as death. Gadflykins, gladtripins, gutterpuss and cass, come to me fairly, each lad and lass.'" Just at that moment, I heard my governess calling from the house, and I knew I was in trouble. I rushed to the door of the potting shed and tried to open it, but it seemed to be locked, which is odd, because the potting shed door is never locked, and when I peered through the keyhole, I saw... Dear diary, I cannot even tell you what I saw. It was... Perhaps one day I will write it down, but just now I can't. I climbed out of the window, but unluckily, I dropped the book back inside as I was jumping out. I'll get it tomorrow, I thought, and ran up to the house. She really was very angry with me. She thought I had run away, because it was so late and I had been gone so long. I didn't get any supper.
And with that, I'm going to close out with my final thoughts on that entry. I'd like to headcanon that what she saw on the other side of that keyhole was the fairy world. Because for some reason, when she had entered the window of her potting shed before, it was, you know, as she mentioned, full of dead tomatoes and boxes full of soil. And so... in this particular dimension, this potting shed served as a sort of home for a fairy, where there was a stove, a bookshelf, a warm rug, and fire. And I thought it was really interesting. And she never ever, and the reason I headcanon this or whatever is because she never ever writes about it again or mentions it. Because she's like, oh yeah, one day I'll tell you. But she doesn't. And that was one of the things that frustrated me as a child until I grew up and I realized, well, maybe she just basically crossed dimensions or, you know, crossed into a parallel universe that only she could enter through at that time. And so I will continue this next time. So I hope you enjoy this week's episode and look forward to more of my press fairy book audio drama that I made back in 2011. So thank you for listening. Have a good day. Did you find yourself today while finding me? feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kpppfm.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kpppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Donations to Fargo-Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kpppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.